Hello, it's Scott Manley here. It's Friday, February 26th. And yeah, Deep Space Updates time. We've had a whole bunch of launches in the last couple of weeks. And they have all been Starlink launches, unfortunately. So there's not really much to talk about here, right? We had a Starlink on the 15th from Vandenberg, from the 16th from Slick 40, a 20th from Slick 40. Although this one was kind of interesting because the booster went downrange and landed in the Bahamas. And the last time that happened was in February 2025. 21st, another Starlink launch from Vandenberg. 22nd was a Starlink launch, but this one was the 33rd flight for a flight leader booster number 1067. 24th, Starlink, Slick 40. And 25th, a Starlink from Vandenberg Space Force Base. So yeah, 7 launches, Falcon 9s, nothing else interesting happening in launch circuits. Not even a suborbital launch. I was really hopeful we'd see something. We were expecting to have Rocket Lab launching their HASTE payload with the hypersonic test, your scramjet thing. Didn't happen. And of course, the whole Artemis thing. Anyway, what we did have was that Cargo Dragon CRS-33 finally undocked from the space station after many, many months, reboosted the space station multiple times. It was docked on the front node, and it undocked after 185 days on station. That is a record for a Cargo Dragon. Usually they spend about a month up there. This one obviously spent like 6 months, and it's coming home, well, it came home off the coast of, California in SoCal. Unfortunately, didn't put on a great show because it came out of the from the south. Anyway, the biggest news from the last couple of weeks, the one that I got the most clicks on, let's say, was NASA's report on Starliner, which I have covered in another video. So the main things from this is that, yes, the report was released publicly, heavily redacted. The incident was reclassed as a Type A mishap because of the financial losses it caused NASA. Yeah, we got a 300-page report from the independent group. They blame issues with like the thrusters, which hadn't really been tested. They discovered quality issues in the design related to like not actually having full like levels of redundancy that was required. And then there was a whole lot of unprofessional behavior from people at various levels throughout NASA. And 1 week after this report was released and they promised leadership changes at NASA, well, a couple of people that were involved in some level or another, Ken Bowersox and Steve Stitch, are moving on. Now, Ken Bowersox, he's, you know, NASA astronaut. He was on the space station in 2003, you know. He has a lot of experience, and he sort of ended up in this job after Kathy Luders left to go to SpaceX. And so I'm not sure how much he was involved, but anyway, he's retiring because he's old. And the other guy, Steve Stitch, he's going elsewhere in NASA. He also incidentally got his position in this program when Kathy Luders retired. It seems that she went everywhere first. Anyway, moving onwards, those guys are being replaced by their current deputies. There might be someone else that comes in at a later date. So anyway, the other big NASA news, of course, is that Artemis 2 SLS, it went through a second wet dress rehearsal and everything worked correctly. I mean, they did have some like unplanned holds, but they eventually counted all the way down to like T-minus 29 seconds. Big success. We said, yeah, we are going to be going in March. March, I was getting super excited that I was going to be going out to Florida. I didn't quite get around to buying my plane ticket, but I did record a video which basically opened with Artemis taking off next month. Yeah, before we then found out that Artemis SLS is having a problem with this upper stage, the ICPS, the Interim Cryogenic Propulsion Stage. Helium bottles are having some issues. You know, these are required to pressurize the propellant tanks and spin up the engines before it fires. And unfortunately, to address this, it means that they have to roll the entire stack back to the vehicle assembly building. Now, that means that the March launch window was out. That's meant that I've had to delay that video and put it to, you know, early April so I can still be like next month. That's why it's available for Patreon viewers, by the way, so right now, so you can watch my thing about the asteroid redirect. Anyway, where was I? Oh, yes. So the SLS stack rolled back to the vehicle assembly building. And I think this is the first time I've seen that NASA has allowed like photographers to put their cameras and set them up inside the vehicle assembly building to watch the giant doors open and the SLS roll in there. So there's some awesome imagery out there from various people. I think it's fabulous because we got to see this, a whole bunch of extra views that we would never see. So hopefully this issue can get addressed, and that will mean that April is the next opportunity. And I'm hoping for April because, you know, I don't want to be waiting too long, right? We only have launch windows up till like April at this point, right? They actually, the last launch window or launch date they offer is April 30th. Presumably something happens the next day. But it's, again, it's kind of annoying that it's taking this long. Okay, so we interrupt this Deep Space update to bring you an update on the Deep Space updates. And this is actually in Deep Space. It's not like a Starlink launch. No, this morning there was going to be a press conference on Artemis, and we expected it was just going to be another, oh, we're shifting the launch date to this. No, this is a complete reimagining of the Artemis program as it is. SLS is still very much involved, but some of the launches, there's going to be some de-scoping of launches, let's say, but there's going to be more launches. So one of the problems with SLS spending all this time on the pad doing wet dress rehearsals and having to roll back is partly because they're only launching it once every 3 years, and so the skills just aren't being maintained. One of the ways to make the program more cost effective is to have it launching faster, and that is going to be the goal, to launch SLS every 10 months. So after Artemis 2, Artemis 3 is now no longer planned to be a lunar landing mission. It's planned to be a low Earth orbit mission, which will rendezvous with HLS hardware, either Blue Moon Mark II or Lunar Starship, possibly both. I mean, I'm sure that's possible. They're going to test the lunar suits. They're going to test the HLS hardware. They're going to test Orion. Now, I do question the wisdom of using such a massive rocket to launch Orion into low Earth orbit. I pointed out that the core stage of SLS would be able to put the entire like second stage or upper stage and Orion into orbit. Like, you don't need that upper stage, but I think that they're going to just not, you know, tweak the rocket too much to make this happen. Anyway, so they're going to test that, and then that will leave the potential for two missions, if they do a 10-month cadence, in 2028, which will be both lunar landing missions with both HLS contractors, not really specifying which is which. Now, the other part of this is that they are saying they're standardizing on SLS Block 1. They're not going to be changing it after every flight, and that means, or sounds like it means, that the exploration upper stage isn't happening. This was going to be the much bigger upper stage on SLS that would finally make it into a real rocket rather than a bunch of spare parts which had way too much performance in that core. But it looks like there's now going to be some replacement for the ICPS, which is no longer interim. It's going to be the one going forward. I presume it's going to be slightly bigger in terms of its mass and performance, but it's not going to be the absolutely humongous exploration upper stage that we were expecting and had been mandated by Congress. So I would imagine that to make this happen, they've got all the people on board, you know, the contractors, NASA, and of course the lawmakers, to agree to this new plan. Now, we don't know much about what this new upper stage might be, but there is an infographic which was released in a video with Jared Isaacman, and it showed SLS current block and the next block, which, you know, there's some differences there. We can see what the upper stage looks like. It's sitting next to the Blue Origin upper stage in New Glenn. They are very obviously different pieces of hardware. Based upon the size and the fact that ULA previously built the interim cryogenic propulsion stage, it would seem that this stage is very likely a ULA-built Centaur V, Centaur V, but there could well be something else going on here. Regardless, this is a radical change for SLS. It keeps it alive, despite everyone saying it should be killed. But, you know, the lawmakers love to keep it alive, and so we sort of knew that killing SLS would be a tall order of business or whatever. So anyway, with that radical change announced, let's get back to the rest of the news. So if you're done looking at images of SLS rolling back into the vehicle assembly building, let's look elsewhere. Over in China, a relatively low-profile startup called Zenk Space, they conducted a first stage test on their Zhihang 1 rocket. Now, this is a company I've basically ever heard of, but they've come out with a 50-meter tall rocket propelled by four YF-102 engines. Now, these are the same engines used in other rockets they basically building their own stage with them. And that supposed to be able to put 4 tons into like 500 kilometer orbit. Anyway, they put video of it being tested by the sea, which is kind of cool. Other cool images that came out. JWST made some cool measurements of Uranus's upper ionosphere. And I'm sharing this simply because it's some cool imagery showing what a planet can look like when a JWST is looking at it. The whole point is to get like the vertical structure of the upper atmosphere, covering how like temperature and charged particles vary with height. And so they're looking at like the aurora and stuff that can form here. So they do actually detect the glows of ionization as the solar wind interacts with the planet's atmosphere. Also, by the way, the JWST in the last few days has been taking a look at Comet 2024 YR4. Remember, that was the one that was potentially going to hit the Earth, and now it's got a 4% chance of hitting the Moon. We would like to know how close, what the real chance is. So we're paying attention to that. Okay. So if you remember ESA, they launched the Proba 3 spacecraft like last year. That makes these artificial solar eclipses. They did actually publish some cool images showing like these, their images or animations of the inner coronosphere or inner corona using this two spacecraft system where you've got one shade that's flying out like 150 meters away and the spacecraft is sort of tracking them in formation. But in the last couple of weeks, there was an annular solar eclipse and the older Proba 2 spacecraft happened to be orbiting over the poles and was able to get some cool annular eclipse images. Now, it's an annular eclipse. That means that the sun the moon is further away from than normal, so it doesn't quite cover the entire sun. Anyway, I thought that was pretty cool when you've got the older system doing eclipses and the newer ones doing it. Okay, Scotland. Remember we said the Orbex has entered receivership? Well, days after this, they started publishing photos showing the work they'd done, the stages they had built. You know, I tell you what, I wish I'd seen these before because I could have been a whole lot more positive about what they were doing. But yeah, you know, they've had these like carbon fiber stages. They're building, they have concentric or coaxial propellant tanks with propane and liquid oxygen. Yeah, it is unfortunate that they never really shared this stuff until they basically went out of business. But apparently, in the wake of them entering into bankruptcy, receivership, their rival in Scotland, Skyrora, has quickly signalled interest in various assets. So now Skyrora, they also have announced a successful hot fire test of their Skyforce rocket engine. So that'll power both the first and second stage of their Skyrora XL rocket. It's got 9 engines on the first stage, a single engine on the second stage. And if everything's still as I understand it, they will be using hydrogen peroxide and, kerosene for their propulsion. So that'll give them a very dense rocket, but not great a specific impulse. But it should do more than enough. And maybe it will be the first rocket launch from the UK. Who knows? Also, Skyrora, they were potentially launching out of the Saxavord spaceport up in Shetland. They might possibly want to switch their work to the spaceport that's actually in the north of Scotland, right? Instead of up in the Shetland Islands. But around about the same time, Rocket Factory Alsberg, who of course I have like patches off down here, they published a few cool images from Saxavord Spaceport up in the Shetlands. So they basically have their proper umbilical tower now all set up. So that's like a 52 meter tall tower, fully equipped with the clamps to stabilize the launch vehicle and fuel it. They've completed the rest of the launch pad. If you remember, they had a launch, static fire test thing, and it went and destroyed everything. So they're sort of rebuilding this. They also now show off their mission control center, the range control center, which will be running the mission, and the assembly, integration, and testing building, which is all going to be on site. So their ground infrastructure is coming on, and they're getting much closer to being able to launch it. Going even further afield than the Shetland Islands, we go all the way to Mars, where Perseverance has been showing off a new skill dubbed Mars Global Localization, right? And the whole point about this is they're now using terrain features scanned from the cameras to locate the rover on the surface. Now, it's a process that takes a few minutes to work, but apparently it can locate them to within like 25 centimeters. And this is now running on a piece of computer hardware which was previously dedicated to communicate with Ingenuity. Ingenuity is now dead, it's gone. So they can repurpose that hardware to do other things. So I think this is a really cool use of technology. So again, what they're doing is they're looking out at terrain features and they're mapping that back, triangulating them to figure out exactly where the rover is. And they can do this autonomously and phone home so that they don't need to, you know, verify this with respect to, you know, imagery from orbiting assets. Okay, so now if we rewind to last month, the big news was the whole medical issue on the space station. Someone on Crew 11 was sick and they had to be brought home early. Now we have a lot more details on this and we have them from the person that was affected, right? So Michael Fink basically said, yes, he was the one that was sick. On January 7th, he experienced a medical event that required immediate attention from his crewmates who stabilized him, made sure he was okay. But in the wake of that, they wanted to be sure everything was going to be fine. And so NASA determined that the safest course was for him to return. And, you know, that would give him access to medical imaging capabilities, which were simply not available in space. And so, yes, this is great that Michael's coming out and, you know, he was basically thanking his crew and NASA for working with him and making sure that he was all right, for putting him above the rest of the mission. And that's the kind of thing you want to hear, right? When you are or you're working in space, that everybody has your back, that you're important to everyone. And it's good to hear that him coming out and saying this. Okay, Tory Bruno, if you remember, he switched teams. He left ULA to start working at Blue Origin. Well, there's been a story out with his first sort of real discussion with reporters since then, where he says that he's joined Blue Origin to work on urgent national security projects. And he started sharing images of Blue Ring. So, and this is basically currently in testing. So we got to see the actual hardware. Blue Ring is Blue Origin's satellite bus hardware, so they can strap payloads and stuff to the side and it'll provide power and propulsion and everything else. So it's like if you're building a spacecraft, then they do most of the work for you. This is a great technology, great thing. It's a common thing to have. So this is supposed to provide quite a lot of Delta V capabilities, the kind of thing that you want if you're going to be operating it, you know, in cislunar space, if you need agile spacecraft that can respond to say other spacecraft that are being agile. So anyway, it's kind of cool to start seeing these images, and we'll see a launch of Blue Ring later this year. And of course, flip side of this is that after the Vulcan anomaly, US Space Force has again suspended national security payload launches on Vulcan until the investigation into the solid booster has been completed. So I guess other companies might except launching on that booster. I don't know if Amazon is going to do that because they're going to have six boosters. But I'm not sure what's going on there, unfortunately. Okay, another remote island over in Madagascar. Yeah, this place off the side of the east coast of Africa. A strange giant spherical stainless steel tank rolled up on its coast. And of course, it turned up on Facebook and any space nerd suddenly recognized this as being a giant stainless steel testicle. No, header tank, sorry, from a starship. Now, the question was, which starship could have deposited a free-floating header tank? And it's probably Starship 35. That's the one. They got it into orbit, but it was unable to maintain attitude control and it re-entered and broke up. Now, before re-entering, they would have passivated it. That meant, in theory, that they vent all the tanks. But presumably, as it's coming down, it's breaking up. All that liquid oxygen or liquid methane, I'm not really clear what, doesn't evaporate quickly enough. That probably lets it break three, probably helps it stay cool enough to actually make it through the atmosphere without burning up. And then it ends up in the ocean, floats around for, 6 months or so, finally washes up on the shore. Now, so some guys from SpaceX have gone and checked it out and they said, yep, that's what we think it is. And it sounds like it's going to stay in this little village and basically be erected as a monument to, I don't know, flotsam and jetsam and stuff coming in from the sea. I don't know, maybe there'll be some space tourists that go down to see this thing. I think it's kind of cool to see just like this big chunk of space hardware just randomly turn up on a beach. So now Rocket Lab, today they just had their latest quarterly earnings report. In amongst all that, all the numbers, the acquisitions, all these kind of things, update on the Neutron schedule to Q4 of 2026 at the earliest, so this could slip to 2027. They did actually have some information on the test tank failure, right? So this was a first stage tank which was supposed to be doing hydrostatic testing. It was expecting to pass. They were filling the tanks with water and it failed. And we weren't sure whether it was a design defect, manufacturing defect, something else. But their investigation has said this is a manufacturing defect that was resulted in from a reduction of strength in a critical joint in the tank. And so they're modifying this for the future. But this tank in particular was manufactured by a third-party contractor using like a manual hands-on layup process, right? So that's how you're basically putting the carbon fiber on and then, treating it and whatever, right? Now, apparently, this was a decision they took to, allocate it to a third party because Rocket Lab's automatic fiber placement machine wasn't working. And that makes me immediately say, wait, your qualification article was going to be a one-off thing that was built by hand by a third party? Doesn't sound like a great qualification article to me. But nevertheless, the next tank, which is now going to be going through this testing, is being built in the production system using their automatic fiber placement system. So maybe we'll get a better result this time with the modifications as well. Okay, so now rewinding to a year ago, Lunar Trailblazer, if you remember, this was a secondary payload on Intuitive Machines' launch of their lander to the moon. Now, we know that lander sort of got there and then fell over. If you remember, Lunar Trailblazer, it kind of went silent after launch. And now, a year on, someone has uncovered a report on what actually happened. So NPR, they did a Freedom of Information Act, and they've come out with a story that says, yeah, so what happened was there was a software issue. The spacecraft got into space and its software decided to point its solar panels relative to the sun. They pointed the panels, 180 degrees away from the sun, i.e. exactly the wrong direction. Somebody got their coordinate system messed up or something. This is not great. So the Lunar Trailblazer satellite was built and developed at low cost by Lockheed Martin. And apparently the company didn't actually bother testing this particular pointing software before the launch. And there were other problems in the software which basically made it impossible for them to actually rescue the mission. And so the mission basically died doing its best not to point its panels at the sun. Yeah, okay, that's not great. So now with that unfortunate outcome, let's take a look to the future in the next few days. What can we expect? Well, hopefully Rocket Lab's HASTE launch system will get the hypersonic scramjet payload flying. That will be really cool to see if that actually lights. I don't know if you know that Hypersonics is actually an Australian company, like University of Queensland and everything, who do a lot of work in hypersonic scramjets. And obviously Rocket Lab, kind of from New Zealand, so it's kind of cool that you've got the Australian, New Zealand working together on this hypersonic thing. I want to see this work. I also need to make a video on hypersonic, scramjets, so how that works. The other thing to watch, which might be early March, although it keeps getting moved back, is Space One's Kairos. It'll be the third flight. Maybe this one will be successful. This is a small launch company based in Japan. They have a bunch of like crowdfunding supporters and stuff like that. Very much hope that this is successful because, it's great to see small companies actually managing success. I'm Scott Manley. Fly safe.